Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
What's up, everybody? I am Jeff Howe from Nesson.com. Once again, I am not John Rook. That's the name they were trying to label me as yesterday when I filled in for the first time. I will be here from 2 to 4. Eric Scalavino has joined me for at least the first hour until he gets sick
of
me.
Or so.
Yeah, you know, give or take. Yeah. Once you're overtaken by this whole incident here, if that's what you want to call it. Like I said yesterday, let's go global today. I want to hear from people all over the world. Call in from Thailand.
We've gotten that before.
From wherever.
Philippines.
Yeah, let's go global.
Skype is a wonderful thing. Magic Jack, they've used all that to get in touch with this show.
Do whatever you got to do.
Yeah.
You can call us. You can email us. I love the Americans, too. So even the domestic calls, we can stay here. As local as Foxborough High School.
And you have to, because today is Thursday. It's Prediction Thursday in the playbook, as it always is. We need your score prediction for the game, and also just a little bit of a crystal ball on how it's going to unfold. Not just the score, but we like to know, it's going to be a close game late, and then one team pulls away. Is it going to be a blowout from the start? What's going to happen? You know, you got to give us everything.
So none of this calling, giving us a 31-27 and
hanging
up.
No,
none
of course
that.
Not.
We don't want numbers.
No.
We want the meat and
right.
The potatoes.
Exactly. And right. The dessert. Because I like dessert, too. And we have dessert today, you know.
I just ate a dozen cookies, and they cost me 95 cents. So hopefully I can stick it out through the course of this entire 2 hours.
You got a sugar rush, then.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. We'll be jumping all over the place. That's why we need to go global. Wanted to start with something today that Vince Wilfork initially brought up and then talked to some guys in the locker room about it. Everybody in the world knows that it's tough to tackle a guy who's 6'5" and 240-something pounds. That goes without saying. Ben Roethlisberger is bigger than a lot of human beings. And because of that, it is tough to get Roethlisberger to the ground.
A lot of football players, too.
Exactly. So they say they look at tape and they see guys dangling off of him. And Rob Ninkovich said, if I get a chance, I'm just going to jump on him and hang on for dear life and hope somebody comes in and saves me. Ninkovich knows well from that because, as he said today, he actually missed a tackle on Roethlisberger last year. But there's a fine line that goes beyond that, I guess, and that's tackling Roethlisberger and getting him to the ground and not drawing a personal foul. And with the inconsistencies that they're calling these penalties, especially this season, that's going to be a tough fine line for these guys to walk. And when you've got a guy who's that big, they need to, as they said, jump on his back and basically just hope they can ride him to the ground. But the officials with Roethlisberger, especially with him, because they know how long he can keep a play going, might be more reluctant to blow a whistle to blow a play dead as they might be with another quarterback, say, like a Tom Brady who's wrapped up.
Right.
So there's a huge, huge gray area with this guy, and guys like Vince Wilfork have been fined for hitting a quarterback. Ninkovich and Andre Carter have been fined $15,000 each for hitting a quarterback already this season, so they know how serious these rules can be and how gray the area can become. It's something you definitely have to watch out for this week in Pittsburgh, because those 15 yards, we were talking about it yesterday, if you give up 15 yards, it's almost a certainty that a team is going to go ahead and score.
Yeah. Now, and the inconsistency is the real issue.
Right.
The inconsistency of the calls, I think, because you see it crew to crew. It changes on what they, and not just game to game and player to player, like the officiating crew. You know, a lot of times we'll hear the players in the locker room after the game say, yeah, we knew they were going to call this one tight.
Right.
Sucky.
Yeah, well, some of them do. Some of them, like the Chargers-Jets game we talked about yesterday, that crew was terrible with some of the calls they made.
The Pats-Bills crew this year was awful.
Oh, God,
on both sides. Yeah,
on both sides, absolutely. Yeah, not just one-sided. They were inconsistent. They were consistently inconsistent
with
the way they called their penalties in those games. The thing I think that the defensive players have to try to avoid is diving low.
Yeah.
Because that's where the gray area really comes in. since the Brady rule has been in effect. Because I've seen guys on the ground grab a guy by the legs and nothing's called. I've also seen it called, and I've seen guys diving at the legs of a quarterback and it not get called. I don't know. I really don't know what. I just assume every time a quarterback gets hit now, there's going to be a flag.
Right. That's the scary one.
And I hate that.
And that's the scary one. You would think that any time a defensive player is going after the knees of a quarterback, whether he's as long as he's not pushed into him by his own offensive lineman or the opposing offensive lineman, you got to see that flag go up. That's the scarier hit than the headshots, really. I mean, how often do you really get a good, clean headshot in on a quarterback? And obviously they're...
Unless it's late.
Exactly. You know? In the late ones, yeah. They draw the flags. Mm-hmm. But I thought the officials did a good job, or at least the rules committee did a good job this offseason, by taking away that automatic headshot personal foul. So if it's an incidental thing, if you're running by and your hand happens to accidentally graze the helmet of a quarterback, it's no longer a penalty. But when you're trying to drive a guy to the ground, and I think that's the big one, when you're trying to drive a guy like Roethlisberger to the ground, you can't usually just tackle him unless he's stationary and doesn't see you coming. If he knows that there's a defender on his way to tackle him, It's almost impossible to get him down with that first effort. You need a second one. And then after that first effort, is the whistle going to blow? And if it does, then they're going to have plenty of time to lay up or to let up. And if it doesn't, then they're going to drive him to the ground because that's the only way to get him down. And then is the official having a bad day? Did he wake up on the wrong side of the bed? Does he want to throw his laundry on the field because of that?
Yeah. It's a great point. I don't know how they're going to be able to. Well, first of all, we're assuming they're getting to him.
Right.
And I'm not going to make that leap just yet. I know they've made some progress the last two games defensively, but I still don't know whether or not those were anomalies or whether there's a trend going here. I'm hoping it's the latter for their sake because I want to see good football. But, yeah, they have to get to Roethlisberger first. Now, I know their offensive line we talked about yesterday. Not in the greatest shape right now, so maybe they have a little bit of an edge there. And they have a rookie starting at right tackle, Marcus Gilbert. So you would think that a veteran like Sean Ellis, who's normally lined up against the right tackle, might have an advantage there. That's the spot I'm going to be looking at, I think. Even though I know Andre Carter's the guy who's gotten to the quarterback of late, I'm gonna look from the other side, and I know that's the side that Roethlisberger's looking to, because he's right-handed.
Right.
But if you can, even just if Ellis gets in the backfield there, then you create that situation where now he has to tuck it, he has to run around, maybe runs into somebody on the other side, rushing.
I've fallen, and I can't get up.
Well, that's the thing. Ben usually gets up. From these, even though he's limping around, he gets up.
Tough as they come, really. And like we said yesterday, they've started three left tackles, two left guards, two right guards, and two right tackles through just seven games this season. It's almost exactly like what happened last year as the team somehow managed to find its way to the Super Bowl. And as we're talking about this, they're showing highlights of Matt Ryan going down.
Yeah.
And really...
And Dominican Sue hit.
Yeah, and really, I'll get to that real quick. At first, that hit looked awful. It looked like his ankle was going to need to be reattached.
Yeah.
That looked awful. But the guy was, he went to the locker room real quick, came back out, was
fine.
In the game.
Yeah.
And I mean, who is this? Vince Carter? I mean, the guy acted like, how many times have you seen Vince Carter go down with a career-ending injury only to go back to the bench and come back out and be fine? I mean, this was a little much, and I love how the Falcons were complaining that Ndamukong Suh was taunting Matt Ryan when he was on the ground and saying, bring out the cart. You gotta love stuff like that. Now, I think Suh is a little bit, he crosses the line a little bit, and I don't know if he's got a reputation that he wants to really start already. He started it last year with some harder hits and some nasty stuff. Love the way he plays, but you'd like him to rein it in a little bit. This is a guy who has a chance to be one of the most popular players on the defensive side of the ball in generations, especially in Detroit. And you don't want him to let himself get off track and then all of a sudden just be this huge villain. It's fun to play the villain when you're at that position.
And they also have Nick Fairley, who hasn't really, you know, he's been injured and hasn't played much, but he had an even worse reputation for that.
He did.
Coming out of Auburn last year. So you put the two of them together.
Right.
You're just, those are hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines waiting to happen.
Yeah. And then you've got Vandenbosch, who has maybe the greatest motor in all of football, who's playing on the
just
outside.
Ask Albert Haynesworth.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's Nick Fairley, by the way. He was my favorite player to watch in college football last year. The way that he dominated those games, he was a blast to watch. So
I don't like cheap shot artists, though, and he was a cheap shot artist.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear what Sue said later in the week about the whole controversy with what he said?
What's that?
Called it karma for all the bad things the Falcons have done.
Yeah. What bad things was he referring to, though? I did hear that comment, but
I don't know, but I thought it was interesting because usually, you know, somebody will say something about him and he just kind of shakes it off. This is the first time he's really responded, and it didn't look good on his part.
Yeah, and I was left shaking my head, though, because I'm like, well, how often do the Falcons and the Lions face each other?
Right. Is that a shot at Vic?
I don't know. I don't know what he was referring to, because I don't really think, when I think of the Falcons, I don't think of a dirty team or a cheap team.
No, not at all.
So I don't know. I don't know what he was talking about.
It's a really kind of an upstanding sort of team. They're
Mike Smith is one of the nicest head coaches in the league.
Thomas Dimitroff.
Used to work here. He was one of the nicest guys in this organization when he was here. And
Matt Ryan's as clean cut as they come.
Yeah.
Really.
So I don't know what he was talking about.
Well, let's rein it back in here.
We go off on tangents on the show all the time, feel bad.
Hey, at least this tangent stayed on football. I think we can pat ourselves on the back.
That's true. We started the show last week with the hot sauce tangent. Oof. We started off with that. Went a good 20 minutes, I think.
Oh, yeah. We went longer than that because people emailed in about it.
That's right.
We went pretty much the whole show.
Speaking of which, did you give those out? Webradio at patriots.com?
I did not.
508-298-0398, Ace Ticket Hotline. That's how you can get a hold of us. Or, Skype and Magic Jack, all those other things.
Bring it from all over the world, everywhere. And I have a funny hot sauce story. I can't tell it, really, because it's awful. I mean, they'd shut...
That's why you have to tell us.
They'd shut the whole operation down.
Can't be any worse than some of the things we heard from people with this stuff last week. They said some guy at a bar, they thought he was going to die, and they were laughing at it.
Nothing like laughing at death, I guess, really.
Come on, you can't tease us, Howitzer.
No, I can't do it. Can't do it. It's really...
we'll talk about it during the break.
We will. We'll have to shut the mics off. And you bring up the email, and I am going to make a conscious effort to read these emails this time around as opposed to ignoring them from my technological deficiencies yesterday.
I didn't think you could read. Well, I was getting worried. For a writer, that's a bad thing.
I don't have to read what I write. Yeah. As long as I can get it out there. I got editors.
Oh, okay.
Good people. So anyway... we can talk about anything. Bring it all on the table today. Get Welker's contract, the Pat Steelers game. I have some more stuff on Mike Wallace from something that I wrote last night. The situation at center. We brought up Dan Copen and Dan Connolly last year. Marcus Cannon. I saw him for the first time today. Got a chance to meet him for the first time, I should say. He is a big guy.
He's a big one.
There's no doubt in my mind that he is big enough to play basically any position on the offensive line that he wants or that they need him to play.
Yeah.
And when he is right, when he gets back, whether it's this season or more likely next season or full strength at this point next season,
right,
he's a guy who has definite ability to play both tackle positions, I would think, and then both guard positions. And how valuable is a guy like that to a Bill Belichick team?
These things really are huge.
To a guy
who
likes to use a guy in as many positions as possible. We mentioned Quinn Ojanaka yesterday, who I don't know how often he got on the field, maybe a handful of snaps over the course of the season, but knowing that he was on the bench and could play.
And he did play, I think, virtually every position except center last year.
Yeah, and I think he might have even taken snaps at center, whether it was in practice or with another team. But I'm fairly positive he had experience at all five offensive line positions. Mm-hmm. And hey, he doesn't have to start to be effective. Just having that insurance on your bench. Some coaches refuse to take more than 7 offensive linemen into a game. Others are like 8 because of the flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
So a guy like that with that positional flexibility on the line is extremely valuable. I mean, you saw earlier this season, the Patriots only had 2 tackles, that Dallas game. And really, I think what could go down as one of the most underrated performances of this entire Patriots season is what Matt Leit did on that last drive to come back from an ankle injury.
Yeah.
You know, when Brady snuck for that first down,
mm-hmm.
Light went down. He got somebody caught him from underneath, and Light stayed on the ground for a moment. Now, at that point, there was, I want to say, 30 to 40 seconds on the clock.
Mm-hmm.
The Patriots had one timeout. They were at about the 30-yard line after Brady snuck for the first down, and they didn't have Sebastian Vollmer in that game. Their only backup linemen were Ryan Wendell and Donald Thomas, who are interior guys. So Matt Light stays on the ground. Now, the clock running, mm-hmm. an injury timeout, the refs are usually going to be pretty quick to blow the whistle on that. Light kind of rolled around for a second, got back up, hobbled to the line, which was huge, because if they blow the timeout, that's the Patriots' last timeout. They got nothing left. Right. So that greatly reduces the amount of plays that they can run afterward. And then Light also has to come off the field for one play, which means what do they do at left tackle? Do they move Mankins to left tackle?
Probably.
And then bring in Wendell to play left guard?
Probably. Or Thomas, because Thomas has come in as the extra blocking tight end
mm-hmm.
and a couple of packages. When they did just that, they actually moved they moved Light out as the extra tight end, Mankins
right.
over to tackle, and mm-hmm. Thomas came in as the left guard. They just sort of shifted the whole line over. So my guess is they would probably do that. They'd probably have moved Mankins to tackle for that one play and throw Thomas in there.
And then, obviously not ideal, but I think from Mankins' perspective, in that situation, when you have DeMarcus Ware lined up over you, if you have six offensive linemen and a guy who you're very used to being on your left side, Matt Light, on the bench, I think that it opens up to a little more reason for worry if you're a guy like Mankins. So, and then after that, let's say they complete a pass over the middle, like they did two plays later to Welker. The clock's running. It's not like they can just sub Light right back in.
Mm-hmm.
If they do, it takes up a few more seconds. What I'm trying to say is, if Light stayed down for an extra second or two, the refs blow that whistle, you're really looking at a best-case scenario, the Patriots kicking a field goal and getting that game into overtime. So because Light stuck it out, Brian Waters raved about Light's toughness later on that week and said how much he respected him for doing that. Like I said, he was only on the field for three more plays. The first one, he kind of got handled by DeMarcus Ware. The next two, which was the pass to Welker and then the pass to Hernandez in the end zone, Mankins gave him some help, so they double-teamed Ware. But his ability to stay on the field was huge, absolutely huge, for the Patriots to go in and win that game and go into the bye week with a victory
mm-hmm.
rather than having to sit on that loss or a potential loss or, hey, even a tie.
Yeah, I think I'm curious to see what transactions are made, if any, before Sunday with regard to either the PUP or NFI guys. I doubt we'll see Cannon
at all
probably this year. I mean, he is back at practice, but something tells me it's probably best for his development if he takes the rest of the year off. But, you know, who knows? But I think there's a strong possibility, as we kind of talked about a little bit yesterday, of one of those other guys coming back. One or more of those
Kevin
guys.
Kevin Falk, LSU.
Yep, he's one. He could be one.
It could definitely be Falk. And I don't know if they would really be in a rush to go with a guy like Brace or Dedrick just yet.
Yeah.
Because they're relatively healthy on the defensive front at this point. If this was 2 weeks ago when Kyle Love and Albert Haynesworth had an issue with their back, maybe you bring in a guy like Brace.
Mm.
But I think at this point, save the roster spot. You've got an extra 2 weeks and let it be. Let the situation play itself out.
The thing, I don't know if you saw any of the game last night. There was a college football game played at Heinz Field. Pitt, UConn, I believe. I think they tore up the field a little bit.
That's where John Rook has been.
Right.
Oh, that's
that
right.
Field looked terrible. At the
did
end
it?
Did
you saw some of the game?
Yeah, the field looked awful at the end of that game.
Was it raining during the game?
I think it was off little drizzle, but that field didn't look good.
Yeah, and that's a notoriously unreliable field surface.
Didn't they go a couple of years ago? Didn't they resaw the field 12 hours before game time or something like that?
Yeah, I think they even did it last year
before
the Patriots game when they came in. So they might have to do it again this year, and the weather's not going to be much better in the next few days before we get down there.
I think it's supposed to clear up a little on Saturday, but what's that do for you?
Yeah.
Sod on the field for 24 hours is not much better than what it's going to be.
Now, Patriots practiced outside yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And it was off and on showers, so the field was kind of slick.
Yep.
But it was steady rain today, and they went inside.
Right.
So you can't really simulate what Heinz Field is going to be. It's going to be crappy conditions like last night or not, but that is, I think, going to be a little bit of a factor when it comes to trying to get to your earlier point about getting Roethlisberger down.
Right.
I don't know if that helps the defense or not.
I think you can go back to that snow game against the Titans when the Patriots knew the footing was going to be bad, and they know that is a break for the offense because they know where they're going. It's mm-hmm. up to the defense to read and react,
mm-hmm.
and that is where the slips usually come in. I mean, if you want to try to simulate what's going to happen in Pittsburgh with that field, I think their best scenario would be going out behind the stadium to those train tracks and go into the woods, really. I mean, there's no way you can simulate an awful field unless you've really got one of your own. So
we used to have one on this before they put the field turf in. We used to have that kind. Remember that Jets game?
The last time Brady lost in the regular season at Gillette.
Right. Was that Jets game, and it was a muddy mess. Same kind of thing. So just something to keep in mind, because I think that could play a factor, especially like Mike Wallace's speed. It's what we've been hearing all week. You know, how fast can he be on a track that's torn up, wet, who knows what else could happen? You know, I mean, if they resod it, like we saw in Oakland a few weeks ago, they had to resod that field after the baseball season. Was better, obviously, than playing on the dirt infield, but it wasn't great, I didn't think. Wasn't really an ideal surface. It'd probably be better than Heinz Field, though.
Yeah. Mike Wallace is going to be fast if he has, like, garbage bags on his feet and he's running up an ice rink. So I don't think you really have to worry about his speed. But, look, we're going to get to a whole bunch of these emails. We got a bunch in here. Send us some more. I see somebody from Ukraine, I believe, has sent us something. So let's get this thing global. We are going to take a quick break, and we'll get back to it right afterwards.
Hey, it's Jim from Ace Ticket, Boston's very own ticket agency. Ace Ticket is based here in Boston, so we know every seat in every venue. We're Boston fans just like you, from Boston sports to concert and theater. Whether you need one ticket or 100, Ace has you covered. So treat yourself or someone special. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com and take advantage of our free and easy pickup at our Fenway Park or Boston Garden location. That's 1-800-MY-SEATS.
1-800-MY-SEATS.
Dear business traveler who's flying away, you can get more out of your working day with plush leather seats including legroom galore to stretch out your knees, feet, and more. Plus 36 channels of DirecTV in your seat gives you something to watch once work is complete. Log on at JetBlue.com or call for an experience dedicated to you above all. My name is Edwin, and I'm a JetBlue crew member.
And that was a dedication to you from JetBlue. Experience it firsthand at JetBlue.com/business. Based on the average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines, DirecTV service available on flights in 48 contiguous states only.
Droid. Introducing the Droid Bionic by Motorola. So powerful it can access your home computer remotely and pull out your music, movies, images, and documents at the mind-melting speed of Horizon 4G LTE. The Droid Bionic. It's not only the master of droids, it's the master of machines. Control it, and you control everything.
Get the new Droid Bionic by Motorola and never sync with a cord again. Visit any Verizon store, droiddoes.com, or call 1-800-256-4646. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com/4GLTE.
That is the metaphorical sound of you hitting your head against the wall in your search for the perfect brand new car. Let's chalk it up to the fact that you didn't know AutoTrader.com even had new cars. See, AutoTrader.com lets you compare new cars side by side, even special offers, so your head and heart can both get what they want. Say your heart wants a sporty 2011 coupe, but your head wants the best deal in town. Bingo! A never been owned before coupe that your head and heart can both agree on. AutoTrader.com, now the ultimate new car marketplace.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats! What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this when you're ready.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed. Go Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open!
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots Checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Health Care Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
This is Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio. Want to get inside the playbook? Call John on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com.
We are back here again. This is not John Rook. This is Jeff Howe from Nesson.com, joined here by Eric Scalavino. And we are going to be talking Pats until 4 o'clock, or at least I am. I don't know how long Eric's going to stick around.
Until you get, you know, until you get sick of me.
Until you get sick of me, I get, whatever. Maybe we'll just
someone's going to get sick.
There's going to be, yeah, there might be some dead air. But hey, nothing wrong with that.
No, Matt'll take over.
We'll plug through a couple of these emails real quick. I don't know if you can plug through emails. I think that was a little bit of a slip. But anyway, somebody asked, who is this? I'm still getting used to reading on the air, so forgive me while I...
He's still getting used to reading.
Yeah,
folks.
It's the reading thing. Somebody asked about the coverage issues that the Patriots are having and whether or not it could have to do with the time of possession. I don't have the game-by-game time of possession numbers in front of me, but the Patriots are averaging 29 minutes and 25 seconds. So their opponents have had the ball for basically an extra
30
minute.
Seconds or so more.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there are some issues with the stats because the Patriots have gotten some leads. They've dropped into some prevent. They gave up 213 yards on the final three drives against the Dolphins when they were basically in a prevent. So the stats have been diluted a little bit. Or not diluted, but just skewed in one way or another. I don't know if the time of possession is really something that... But, hey, as the emailer pointed out, the Patriots do score quickly, and that is a good problem to kind of have. Another one, a couple emailers. Pete says, is Chad Ochocinco finally going to come to play this weekend? In my opinion, this is his last chance to prove himself that he can produce like he used to. Now... I hit on this yesterday. I don't think there's any reason to say that this week should be his last opportunity. I think at this point in the season, after realizing that Ochocinco has underperformed greatly, that they just have to hope that he can be good in time for December or the playoffs. And if they need him to step up for Deion Branch, who's only played 16 games once in his entire career, then that's what they're going to go with. And I just don't think – you don't say – you've given this guy $6 million. He only has 9, 10, 11 catches, whatever he'll end up having through this weekend. And that's enough. You got to cut him. I just don't see the purpose of cutting a guy just because he's not performing up to expectations. I mean, that happens all around the league. You've already given him his money. The only reason I think you cut him at this point in the season is if he's a disruption in the locker room. And to everybody's knowledge, that is not the case whatsoever. So as long as he's still a good citizen and trying to figure out what is going wrong with the playbook, just let him play out the season. If it doesn't work after a full year, then I think you kind of shake hands, part ways, and move in a different direction.
I would just like to see what would happen with this offense if he were finally clicking with everybody else. What kind of extra dimension that would add. How much better they would be if he's finally up to speed.
Well, up to speed, I mean, it means that he is on the same page with Brady, which means he's up the same level as, I don't want to say the same level as Welker and Branch, but probably in the same wavelength as Hernandez and Gronkowski when they're in patterns and finding the soft spots in the zones or ways to beat man coverage. Whatever they do to beat defenses, if he is up to that mental aptitude, then you've got a great just five tremendous options right there, not including the running backs. So I think the best case scenario is at least it gives you a chance to take Hernandez or Branch or guys like that off the field a little more, use more of a rotation to keep them fresh, because you gotta love the fact that Brady is just in perfect sync with his top four guys right now. But it does have to make you a little bit wary that those four guys are on the fields almost every single play of every single game, mm-hmm. because Ocho Cinco hasn't been able to give them much of a breather. So, another one I want to get to from Hamza in Toronto.
In Toronto. He's a regular.
Nice.
Yeah. Hamza.
Well, all right. Good stuff. Well, anyway, he wants to know if Wes Welker would potentially take a discount on a contract extension. And I think it's a really good point to make. And I believe to an extent he would. He said going into the Cowboys game that he knows he would not be the same receiver, post the same type of numbers, mm-hmm. if he didn't have Tom Brady throwing him the ball. And I think that's as obvious of a statement as there can be. And I think he knows how good he has it. And if he goes somewhere else and doesn't perform, I think there will be this stigma of Patriots who leave Gillette Stadium, go to another team, and just don't produce. And I think because the Patriots are such a hated team around the NFL from the other fan bases, that it's going to be easier for those fan bases to kind of jump down that person's throat. Welker goes to another team, takes some money, and goes to the Falcons, let's say, and he doesn't produce, and he only has 70 catches or something like that, and the crowd wants him to have 110 like he did from 07 to 09. Maybe they get a little fed up with him. Maybe they say, oh, here we go again. It's another Patriot leaving town. So I guess
everyone
what I'm trying to
sucks but me.
I guess what I'm trying to say is Welker knows how good he has it, and he probably doesn't want to put himself in a situation where he realizes that after the fact, after he takes his money, because if that stuff doesn't work out, he's probably released a couple years down the road, looks back on things, has a regret, kind of like what Deion Branch had with Seattle. So I think to this point, and Eric, if you want to jump in, by all means. But I think to this point, I think Welker has done the smart thing by not signing an extension. And I'll preface this by saying I have no idea if these contract talks have started, if there are any negotiations ongoing at all, if they started over the summer, if they've kind of poked around at all during the season. I don't know. Both sides have been extremely quiet with this subject matter. Welker, after last season, I think he had 86 catches, which was about 25 less than he ever had as a member of the Patriots.
Yep.
He was coming off the knee injury, and he wasn't nearly as explosive. He is a far superior player this year than he was last year, and he's shown that he could get back to that level, and he's shown what a difference he does make with the offense.
And 86 catches is nothing to sneeze at.
Not at all.
You know, most receivers would love to have 86 catches in a season.
I mean, Ocho Cinco might not even get to 30.
Good, yeah, exactly. But I mean, even good receivers around the league, 86 is that's a great number.
Yeah,
for a yearly total. And we're looking at him, and you know, we've come to expect triple digits from him when it comes to receptions, mm-hmm. just as if it's nothing. I mean, in a way, he's sort of made this situation tougher for himself because he has raised the level of expectation for him so much that if he goes somewhere else and it's not the right fit system-wise,
right.
and he underproduces, then he's looked at as a bust or whatever. I don't think he would take a discount in terms of the guaranteed money he's looking for.
Okay.
I think he would maybe be willing to take a shorter-term deal, maybe 3 years, as opposed to a longer-term deal, as long as it's front-loaded with the money that he's looking for.
Yeah, that's definitely a good way to look at it, because nobody wants to sign a five-year deal and look at that five-year deal and know in the back of their minds that it's a two-year deal.
They're not going to make it, right.
Right.
They're not going to make it that far. And I think knowing how much Brady has left on his contract, I think that the timing might work out that he might look at it and say, all right, I'll take the shorter term if you give me just more of the guarantee up front. And I think if he's on pace, he's already halfway to 100. Yep. More than halfway to 100 already. Chances are, if he stays healthy, he's going to get there easily. I think he's done enough to deserve the benefit of the doubt to get the guarantee that he's looking for.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think you want to tie yourself up for too long, though, with him, because he is past the 30 mark. Eventually, the skills are going to start to decline.
Right.
But I think he's earned whatever money he's probably going to look for. And I'm guessing 30 to 35 million range
in guarantees.
I mean, for the life of, like, if it's 3 years, he's mm-hmm. looking for a 35 million.
That's
overall.
I think that's
with guarantees. The guarantees this year were what, probably about 50% of the contracts that we saw.
That's a benchmark. Yeah.
Right. So looking at anywhere from 12 to 15 million in guarantees.
I think you look at it, and I've been extremely vocal over the years in saying that, and if you've read some of my two-minute drills, especially during the lockout, I just don't think wide receivers are worth the money that they're typically given. And I wrote something in like February or March about how much of a mistake it is to draft a wide receiver in the top 10. And no matter how good they are, I mean, up until this year, Calvin Johnson might be the best wide receiver in football. He was a top 10 pick, I think the second pick. Up until this year, Lions haven't done anything with him. Say the same thing about Andre Johnson. I don't want to get into all of that, but I don't think a wide receiver would really be worth $10 million a year. Even
brilliant!
Even a guy like Wes Welker. I mean, he's as valuable to this offense, or he's the second most valuable person to this offense. He might be neck and neck with Calvin Johnson among the most valuable wide receivers to their teams in the league. I'm not saying skill-wise, that doesn't mean he's in the top five or the top 10.
What they bring to their
value,
team.
Right.
Yeah, what they bring to the dimension they bring to their offense.
Yeah, and I think right now, I looked it up the other day, I believe he's on pace for 136 receptions. I know he's on pace to break his career high. Marvin Harrison has the NFL record with 143, so he's going to challenge that once again. He almost had it, what was it, 08?
2 years ago, or 3 years ago? Yeah.
So, yeah. Or, yeah, what wouldn't have been 08? That was Castle.
Right.
So it was probably 09. And he is, again, he's so much better than last year. And if you want to sign a contract before your contract is up, a year before your contract is up, it's usually because you want some injury protection, or in the case of Chris Johnson, you know you far out exceeded the expectations of your contract. Mm-hmm. Chris Johnson, when he renegotiated about a year ago, was on pace to be the third highest paid running back on his own team. And I can't even remember who the third string guy was on that team. It was nobody you've ever heard of. He's probably not even in the league anymore.
Yeah.
So those are really the two reasons to go after a contract before yours is up. So I think if Welker wants his a year early, which if he wanted it in August, he would have been giving the Patriots some leverage, because it's really one of those injury protection kind of things. And you can't really blame a guy for doing that. If that's the strategy he wanted to take, then that's all good and fine. You want your money. This is a tough game. Nothing is really guaranteed. If you can get some guaranteed money for a couple of years, then go ahead and take it. Welker obviously had the confidence in his own ability to bounce back from that knee injury and get back to the form where he was at before, and he has definitely done that. And I think a reason why his numbers dropped last year was because he didn't have the explosion. And he wasn't able to separate from linebackers and cornerbacks who were covering him in the slot. As a result, he dropped more passes because he was taking harder hits, and you're not seeing that as much this year. From the Patriots' perspective, if it's almost a smart thing to not give him that contract, although right now Welker is getting the leverage because he's playing so well. But if the Patriots were looking at it, they're saying, he's already undergone a huge knee injury, which was a freak accident, obviously, and most knee injuries are. But the susceptibility to have another one increases. And because of the amount of hits that he takes over the middle, I mean, how many times have you seen him look like he got his head knocked off and then pop right back up and be right back in there? I mean, it's the amount of hits that he takes, it's vicious. And the Patriots had to protect themselves from giving this guy a long-term contract. So I think both sides really gambled on not working out an extension over the summer, and right now it's paying off for Welker.
Plus, history tells you that's not what the Patriots are going to do.
Right.
They're going to wait till the contract runs out and assess the the situation then. They right. did it with Brady. They did it with Will Fork. They did it with Mankins.
Mm-hmm.
Memorably so in the latter two cases.
Yeah.
And I mean, everybody knew Brady was going to get his eventually. And, you know, to no one's surprise, it was the richest deal in history. But even with a guy like him, they waited until the very last minute
yep.
to get it done. If they're not going to give him an extension, you really think they're going to give Welker one before his deal is over with? I don't. But yep. I also think that they're going to get him back in the fold. I don't think he's going to go anywhere. That's
no,
just my that's my just my gut feeling on it.
Right. I think if they sign him to an extension before his deal is up, it's a very team-friendly deal. And you could see why Welker wouldn't want to go in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So what you might see Welker doing here is potentially having the season of his life and doing it while there are better receivers around him, 1 through 4, including the tight ends, than there ever have been. I mean, Moss and Welker were a great 1-2 combination, but Stallworth and Gaffney were not on their level. Now you've got 4 tremendous targets, and Brady is still relying on Welker to pace the offense, and he's doing a great job of it. So you could see Welker say, all right, this is how I played this season. I could go into the free market and get $12 million a year over 4 years, sign $35 million guaranteed, 48 total, 4 years. The Patriots come back and say, and I'm just throwing numbers out there, the Patriots come back and say, we'll give you $30 million over 3 years, and 24 of it will be guaranteed. I think eventually the two sides will be able to come to somewhere in the middle. And unless there's some team that comes out and just says, you know what, I'm going to make you and your great-great-grandkids make sure they never have to work again, I just don't see Welker taking a big money deal to leave New England because he knows yeah. how good he has it.
No, I tend to think that way, too. I keep looking over at the television monitors in here because ESPN's First Take is on. They're debating, will Patriots blow out Steelers? That's their question of the day. And so far, the two people who've chimed in, according to the little scroll that they have on there, they're saying Pittsburgh wins this game.
Wow.
Are you getting any sort of this is Prediction Thursday after all. So are you getting any sense? What's your feeling about this game? Are you more confident, less confident in your original prediction earlier in the week, or?
I think there is a greater probability of the Patriots blowing out the Steelers than winning a close game. I think the two teams are on different levels right now. We went through Pittsburgh's 5 wins yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
They're not impressive.
Yeah,
the Titans are as close to average as you could possibly be, and that's the best team they've probably beaten. You look at Brady's history against Pittsburgh, and he hasn't lost to them since 2004. And I think it's funny that you bring up Brady's great history against the Steelers, and the first thing he says is, "Oh, well, in Halloween of 2004, we didn't have a great job."
Yeah,
but
that was the last time they didn't have a great job against them.
Exactly, that was 7 years ago. Since then,
in Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
because they did have the I think it was the Castle year, right? Didn't Pittsburgh win that year when they came to Gillette?
Because the Patriots didn't beat really any good teams that year.
Right.
But
that was here, and Brady wasn't playing.
Right.
So he has to go all the way back to
2004
right.
when he had a bad game against them.
Mm-hmm.
And his numbers have been through the roof. He has something like 104, 105 quarterback rating in his career against the Steelers, which is the highest for Brady against any team that he's played at least 5 times. So he's got that going for him, which is nice. He just hasn't. It's weird because the Steelers have a tremendous defense, and this year I think they're underperforming a little bit. They'll probably pick it back up later in the season when they have a little more of an effort or a little more losing the word here. But they know they need to go out and play better in order to make a playoff run. So
motivation, was that the word you were looking for?
That's still urgency.
Okay.
That's
sense of urgency.
There we go. The Steelers just don't have it. But the fact that Brady has been able to really manhandle this defense, this Pittsburgh defense, I think he's got like 1,150 passing yards against them in his last 3 games. So he's just killing them. 350-plus yards a game against this defense. He can read it. And for whatever reason, the blitzes that the Jets concoct against Brady and the Patriots are much more complex, much more difficult for Brady to read and decipher before the play. I think he's gotten better at it. He's had his moments. He's really doing a much better job of keeping the Steelers' pass rush at bay. Got to give some credit to the offensive line. They've seen this team plenty, mm-hmm. too. I mean, I think this year it's a different line than you've seen traditionally over the last 5-6 years. But when Brady has time, the zone coverage that they have with their cornerbacks is usually pretty soft. Those guys are beatable. There's no doubt about that. And they're usually pretty soft in the middle of the field, too. Lawrence Timmons made some huge strides last year in the middle, as an inside linebacker. He was probably their most improved defensive player, and he was able to take away some things over the middle of the field. However, James Harrison is not supposed to play this week. He has a broken eyeball, and or Timmons orbital is, bone, however you want to put it.
Timmons moved outside.
Right, so you've got Larry Foote, I believe, who has basically been the starter in Timmons' spot, and are you going to tell me that Larry Foote is going to be able to take away the middle of the field? I mean, you got Troy Polamalu back there, and he's a great X factor, but he plays up closer to the line a lot more. It's just, there's good quarterbacks are able to expose this Pittsburgh defense through the air. Aaron Rodgers killed him in the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Brady did it last year. And the Steelers, I think Belichick spoke about it Wednesday. They don't change much because they don't have to, and I agree. It's been a
against most teams, they look like a great defense.
They've been a top 10 defense in total yardage every year since 2000. So yeah, they don't need good for them. You don't have to change. You have a great system.
Yeah,
but when you
as long as you don't have to play the Patriots or the Packers that often.
Exactly. So it makes me wonder why they haven't been able to make those in-game adjustments. The Steelers, I'm talking about
right,
here,
right?
And why are they being stubborn? I mean, at some point you have to say, you know what? This system is not working against this team. Something has to change. And that's why I think this week is going to tell me more about the Steelers than it will about the Patriots. I'm taking the Patriots to win this game.
I'm guessing you don't expect them to change.
I don't expect them to change.
Yeah, I don't really either. Two touchdowns I don't think is out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be about as comfortable a margin, though, as you could expect on the road.
Yeah.
Even against the team that they've had so much success against recently, and it's virtually the same team.
Yeah.
Over the last, even since 2004, for the most part, there you know some changes, as there always are, but your core players are all still there. Polamalu, Hampton, you know even Harrison, who you know took him a while to finally catch on with Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Got cut so many times
and
came back, but he's. You know, I think it's huge that he's not going to be there because if they have him and Woodley being able to act like pincers and try to go after Brady, they have a much better chance of causing trouble and disrupting the timing of the offense. Without him, they become more of a one-dimensional attack on defense. And with as we talked about yesterday with Gronk, Hernandez, where's Ike Taylor going to play? Are they going to put him on one of the tight ends? Are they going to put him on Welker? I don't think we're going to see much of Timmons blitzing.
Oh, no.
I think we'll see him more dropping into coverage to try to close off zones to try to keep the tight ends in check.
And you know what that does? That gives the Patriots the ability to line up Gronkowski on the right side. The left side of the defense is where Woodley primarily lines up.
Yep.
So you keep Gronkowski in that matchup because Timmons is a huge downgrade when it comes to rushing the passer. He only has 3 quarterback hits, pressures, this season. He doesn't have a sack. And then you compare that to James Harrison, who is really one of the 2 or 3 best outside linebackers in the game. He might be the most complete outside linebacker in football in terms of 3-4 guys. He had, before he went down, 2 sacks. And 7 quarterback hits.
Mm-hmm.
So there is definitely a drop-off there. You're asking a guy like Lawrence Timmons to change his game. Right now, I think we're going to head to another break. If you want to jump on with us, you can call the hotline at 508-298-0398. Or you can email us at webradio@patriots.com. Again, let's get this thing global. Send them in from everywhere. Catch you after the break.
Hey, it's Jim from Ace Ticket, Boston's very own ticket agency. Ace Ticket is based here in Boston, so we know every seat in every venue. We're Boston fans just like you, from Boston sports to concert and theater. Whether you need one ticket or 100, Ace has you covered. So treat yourself or someone special. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com and take advantage of our free and easy pickup at our Fenway Park or Boston Garden location. That's 1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Business traveler who's flying away, you can get more out of your working day with plush leather seats including legroom galore to stretch out your knees, feet, and more. Plus 36 channels of DirecTV in your seat gives you something to watch once work is complete. Log on at jetblue.com or call for an experience dedicated to you above all. My name is Edwin and I'm a JetBlue crew member.
And that was a dedication to you from JetBlue. Experience it firsthand at JetBlue.com/business. Based on the average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines, DirecTV service available on flights in 48 contiguous states only.
Droid.
Introducing the Droid Bionic by Motorola. So powerful it can access your home computer remotely and pull out your music, movies, images, and documents at the mind-melting speed of Verizon 4G LTE. The Droid Bionic. It's not only the master of droids, it's the master of machines. Control it, and you control everything.
Get the new Droid Bionic by Motorola and never sync with a cord again. Visit any Verizon store, droiddoes.com, or call 1-800-256-4646. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com/4GLTE.
That is the metaphorical sound of you hitting your head against the wall in your search for the perfect brand new car. Let's chalk it up to the fact that you didn't know AutoTrader.com even had new cars. See, AutoTrader.com lets you compare new cars side by side, even special offers, so your head and heart can both get what they want. Say your heart wants a sported 2011 coupe, but your head wants the best deal in town. Bingo! A never-been-owned-before coupe that your head and heart can both agree on. AutoTrader.com, now the ultimate new car marketplace.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats! What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help. I'll just take this when you're ready.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed. Go Pats.
With Patriots Checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long. I'm open!
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots Checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Health Care Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochere. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now, back to your host, John Rook.
Actually, John's not here today. It's Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly and Jeff Howe, Nesson.com. And we're joined, as we always are on Thursdays, by our good friend Russell Baxter, the football guru. Russell, how you doing, my friend?
Hello, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
Good, Russell. How are you?
I'm very, very good.
So, Russell, we're during the break and throughout the show, Jeff and I have been trying to get a handle on these Pittsburgh Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
Their record says they're good.
Mm-hmm.
Record says they're 5-2.
Mm-hmm.
My eyeballs tell me that they're not that impressive. What do you think?
Well, I think they've been sporadic. I don't disagree with you at all. I will say they have been resilient after you saw them on opening day against Baltimore, in which they committed 7 turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought physically pushed around in that game.
Yeah.
They're a half a game in first place all of a sudden.
Right.
Winning 5 out of 6. And it's just interesting on how it's how that organization deals with adversity. And then you look at, you know, some other teams who, you know, I look at the Ravens on how they deal with the week after they beat Pittsburgh, they fell flat at Tennessee. And, you know, a Ravens team that still hasn't won a division title since 06, and the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are as consistent as any of them come.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, fortunately in this business, there's no style points. You know, if you chip one in from 60 yards and it hits the flag stick and bounces in, it still counts as the same.
Right.
They somehow find a way to get things done. Now, I think they've shown some cracks in the armor, especially on defense. This is a Steeler team that gave up 100 yards rushing twice all of last year, including the playoffs. And they've been hit up for 130 yards 3 times in 7 games. They've had injuries up front. They have a little age up front, although they've been addressing it. And I think people have kind of missed the boat on, you know, how the Steelers do business, because they have slowly tried to get some youth on their lines. In fact, they've used their last 3 first round picks all on offensive or defensive linemen. Listen, this was a team that was in the Super Bowl last year. They don't look like a Super Bowl team. They look like a playoff team, possibly.
Right, and they certainly didn't look like it last November when New England went down there.
Listen. What Tom Brady has managed to do against Dick LeBeau and that Steeler defense is almost uncanny. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to get in all the numbers, but I'll just start with one. Tom Brady's thrown for 350 or more yards the last 3 times he's played the Steelers. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
350, not 300, 350.
Right.
He hasn't been sacked the last 2 times he played the Steelers. So, I mean, what are the Steelers good for? They're good for defense and pressuring the passer. If you don't get a hand on Tom Brady, you know, you got problems. You don't get a hand on a lot of quarterbacks, you have problems. You don't get a hand on Brady, you're in real trouble.
Right.
But I don't disagree with you, Eric. I mean, they have done just enough to get things done in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. I mean, they beat a, you know, not a very good Seattle team. They struggled with Indianapolis. And I think the thing about that game that probably bothered you a little defensively was after they had taken the lead, they let Curtis Painter, who did not have that much play experience, march down the field on them 80 yards to tie the game. But they've won their last 3 games. They were very impressive against Tennessee. They were impressive for a half against Jacksonville, although we're seeing Jacksonville's defense kind of starting to, you know, come to life a little.
Mm-hmm.
And then Arizona last week, it was big plays. So, you know, again, I don't disagree with you. I think the Steelers are a work in progress, and I'm sure they're hoping that while they're a work in progress, they can somehow manage to get in the playoffs again.
Well, we're going to talk about this game a little bit more in a few minutes, but I know Jeff's anxious to get your thoughts on some of the other interesting games around the league this week.
Yeah, I want to first get your thoughts, and I think the Indy-Tennessee game, it bores the crap out of me, quite frankly. But the question I have here, and I looked at the Colts' schedule, there really aren't any layups on that schedule. There's a couple of free throws in there, but what do you see out of this Colts team? Can they go 0-16? How bad are they?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's for a lack of trying, Jeff. But, I mean, they're so undermanned, and it's not just Manning. Although, the way they have built the football team is Peyton Manning running the offense. They've abandoned the run, basically, for the last couple of years, which is also a big reason I think they're not very good at defending it, because how do you defense the run when you don't practice against it? They're built to get a big lead, and then they're built to have Mathis and Freeney rush the passer. They're missing other defenders like Gary Brackett and Melvin Bullitt. So they are undermanned in a lot of regards. And they're, you know, they haven't been an overly deep team to begin with. Offensively, they've had great skill people. efficient offensive line play, and Manning. Defensively, they have overturned their roster every 3 or 4 years because their defense is built for speed and not necessarily the long haul. They're a team that can get pounded on. They've always been a team kind of a little undersized on the defensive side of the ball, but they're trying to create turnovers. You go back and look through the years, when the Colts don't get turnovers, they don't usually win, unless Manning is scoring 45 points. So when you built your team around the talents of one guy, which, frankly, I don't know how you do that, and it's an exceptional guy, don't get me wrong, but this isn't bowling or football or bowling, tennis, or handball. You've got to have a little more to it. There are other ways to win football games. There are other ways to lose football games. And it's actually a shame to see what's happened with them. And, I mean, to see what happened Sunday night, I mean, they looked absolutely hapless and helpless against New Orleans.
No!
Yeah, that was embarrassing. That was embarrassing.
But, I mean, listen, you look at the teams in their division. Can Jacksonville beat them in Indianapolis later in the year?
Sure.
That'll be an interesting game.
Mm-hmm.
Can Tennessee go into Indianapolis and beat them later year? I don't know. Maybe in the end, you know, who knows what's going to happen between now and then. I'm still reeling from a couple of weeks ago when Seattle came east and beat the Giants.
Yeah.
Okay? I'm still scratching my head about Monday night.
Oh, you know, the Ravens. Because they are one of the contenders in the AFC. I think, clearly.
A team that is as dominant as any team in football when they show up.
I mean, yeah, look at week one, like Russell said, against the Steelers.
Yep.
They manhandled that team, and that's the Steelers are a good team.
That's a rivalry game against a prideful team.
Yeah.
As you guys well know, you can't put all your energy into one basket, okay? And you've got to be able to, listen, do you want to win by 20 and then lose by 15 the next week? Or would you rather win every game by 1 point?
Why not win them all by 40?
Yeah, of course you would. But, I mean, you understand my point. You've got to go with the highs and the lows, and it's just been strange to watch. I mean, listen, the week before the Jacksonville game, Baltimore did a pretty good job on Houston.
Yeah.
And then they come back Monday night. And I don't know anybody in watching, listening, reading who thought Jacksonville had a chance in that game.
No.
And they didn't even score a touchdown.
Yeah.
And yet, Baltimore went in there and lost the game. So, you know, that's what makes Pittsburgh, New England, Green Bay, these steady franchises who have a formula year in and year out. And up until this year, you had to throw the Colts in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the same teams year in and year out. In an era of parity, why is it that we've had three different teams in the AFC go to the Super Bowl the last 8 years? It's either been Indy, New England, or Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
8 years in a row. Because those franchises are built, they all have a plan. You got to have a plan.
Well,
you know, it can't be spin the bottle or make it up as you go along in the National Football League, especially this year with such a tumultuous offseason for all 32 teams.
All right, before we get your thoughts on a couple of NFC games, the other, I think, legitimate contender, or at least going into the midway point of the season here, was San Diego. And they stumbled last week at New York, a game they should have won, I think, with the lead that they had, especially going into the half. They had the momentum and everything. They dropped that one. Now they go to Arrowhead, which has historically been a tough place to win, even when the Chiefs are bad.
Yep.
And that's become more unpredictable the last couple of years, especially since Castle's been there. Arrowhead hasn't... I think they've lost a little bit of that that home field advantage. It's no longer that teams are frightened to go to Arrowhead because, I mean, look what the Bills did week one.
Yeah.
Went in there and thoroughly embarrassed the Chiefs. So now the Chargers, who normally start the season slowly, started the season kind of on a hot streak and now have sort of tempered off a little bit. Your thoughts on them and where they go for the rest of the year?
Well, that's what's make this league fun. After 2 weeks, the Chiefs were outscored 89-10. Okay,
that's not good.
Monday night they're playing for the division lead.
That's crazy.
To tie the division lead.
Yeah.
They're a game out of first place.
Yeah,
they've won three in a row after losing their first three. They did beat. And they beat the Chargers last year in Arrowhead.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. We finally saw the Chargers get off to a good start. It was their best start under North Turner. who had gone 2-3, 2-3, 2-3, and let me guess, 2-3.
And they said, enough of that.
Yeah.
Enough of that. We need to get back to Charger football.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And you're right. It seemed like they almost like ran out of gas last week against the Jets.
Yeah.
Okay?
Disappointing if you're a Patriots fan.
Given the fact that they finally had Antonio Gates back.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, we saw San Diego last year, very talented team, who, you know, with number one in offense, number one in defense, number 45 in special teams, which really put a cost them their season, frankly. They've been a little better in that regard this year. But suddenly now they go on the road, lose to New York, now they go on the road Monday night, and, you know, we already know this is a team that's talented, but psychologically, you can't figure them out. Okay? They love to get off these slow starts and then get hot and then fizzle right away in the playoffs. So, I mean, this is obviously a huge game for them, and also for the Chiefs, too, if they can keep their momentum going. But, I mean, I look at Kansas City. The one thing about Kansas City is they have not done a good job rushing the passer. I think they have 6 sacks in their 6 games. And unless they get some heat on Phillip Rivers, I just think the Chargers have too many ways, weapon-wise, to hurt you. In that game last year when they beat them in Kansas City, that was a big special teams game for the Chiefs. I don't know if the Chargers don't look like they're that bad on special teams anymore, or at least early on. So I think if San Diego's headed where I think they might be headed, and in a couple weeks they have a showdown with Oakland on a Thursday night, I think they have to win this game, and I think I like San Diego's chances in this.
I tend to agree.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Kansas City's for real yet. I think they took advantage. They were good last year, but they took advantage of a weak schedule and the ineptitude of the Chargers. My favorite Chargers story when it comes up to their ridiculous ineptitude, Norv Turner totally hated my question when I thought his team didn't play disciplined football earlier this season. So I thought that, whatever. Anyway, getting off topic, Richard Goodman, if you'll remember this from last year, he was the guy who caught the pass over the middle of the field and then put the ball on the ground, got up and started celebrating. Thing was, nobody touched him. Nobody was close to touching him. The Patriots picked it up. It
free
was
ball.
A fumble.
Yep.
That, I still check on this, and I haven't checked on it in a couple weeks, so it might have changed, but I highly doubt it. That is still Richard Goodman's only career reception.
Really?
Only one. And he put it on the ground.
Oh, man.
He's a special teamer now, but anyway, let's switch gears a
kinda
little
like
bit.
That. It's not, that's not the moment that you want to be like your Moonlight Graham moment.
Yeah.
No,
you're, you know?
Right. Your parents aren't going to be putting that picture on the fridge. let's bring it back a little closer now and talk about this weekend's game against the Patriots and the Steelers. What do you think is going to happen? What are you seeing out of both of these teams? And give us a little bit of a prediction.
Well, listen, the numbers, and in case you don't know the numbers, and I threw out one of the numbers with Tom Brady as far as how he has fared against the Steelers. You know, overall 6-1 lifetime as a starter. Although I always put an asterisk on the first one, and you guys probably know why. That was the 0-1 AFC Championship game at Pittsburgh, which, of course, Tom started.
Didn't finish,
and actually Drew Bledsoe came in and threw a touchdown pass in that game, and the special teams came up big and so on. So, but I go back to Brady himself has beaten, and not by himself, I don't mean it that way. I'm talking about Brady as a starter has beaten the Steelers 4 straight times. Ever since when Pittsburgh, remember, unseated them that 21-game overall winning streak in Pittsburgh, in which Brady had a rough afternoon.
Halloween.
He was sacked, I think, 4 times. He turned over ball 3 times. It's like he's almost like made the Steelers pay for it ever since. And until they find a way, the Steelers at least, to cool off that New England offense, you know, I still say, listen, it's not like this has all been in New England. They've beaten them three of those games of the 4 have been in Pittsburgh.
Right.
So you have to give credit where credit's due. You know, football is a game of matchups. And whatever Dick LeBeau does or doesn't do, Tom Brady and the coaching staff have been able to figure out. And, you know, it was never more evident than in the Sunday night game last year. You know, we know the problems that New England's defense has had for like a year and a half. But even when the Steelers mounted a little bit of a charge in that game last year, they could just not stop the Patriots when they had to. I mean, people don't go into Listen, Pittsburgh gets pushed around every once in a while. They did by the Ravens in week one. People don't go in Pittsburgh and push the Steelers around. And the Patriots have done it more than once, and Brady obviously has been the big catalyst to that.
Well, how does Pittsburgh shut down this offense? Because
there is only one, to me, there's one way to shut down this offense.
Get to Brady.
And that, well, either get to him or get him on the sidelines. Okay?
Yeah, control the football.
I mean, you throw a touchdown pass when you're on the sidelines, it doesn't count. They can't seem to get Brady off the field unless he scores so fast they get him off the field. And Pittsburgh, which has been sporadic with its running game, they've had some big outings. Okay, they had a big outing against Jacksonville. They had a semi-big outing against Tennessee. And then they've had other games where they've kind of abandoned the run. You know, they did a lot of that with Ben Roethlisberger last week in the Arizona game, the 95-yard touchdown pass to Mike Wallace and the two other touchdown passes he threw. They didn't run as much. You know, Bruce Arians gets his own criticism for his play calling in Pittsburgh. But they need to impose their will a little and limit it. It's almost like you want to do back in, you remember back in the day when the Patriots had Corey Dillon and the Colts were their high-scoring best. They wanted to keep Peyton Manning on the sidelines. The Steelers need to do to the Patriots what the Patriots used to do to Indianapolis. And I know that sounds rudimentary simple, but New England's got some holes on defense.
Mm.
And I think there's areas that the Steelers can exploit. I think they're always going to want to go long at times, especially with Wallace, who is one of the best home run threats in the league. But like I said, the Steelers need some 6-minute and 7-minute drives in this game to limit what Brady does. And then if they can get a pick, and if they get a sack and a strip, they can win this game. But well, until I see otherwise, I have to lean toward the Patriots because I haven't seen anything that indicates to me in this matchup. I'm not saying how well the Steelers are playing and how well the Patriots are playing. When these two teams get together, I haven't seen anything other than Brady finding his, I mean, in the last four games against them, he's completed like 71% of his passes. And again, no sacks in the last two games, 350 plus yards the last three games. He does what he wants against them. And until I see, it was like when New England played Buffalo this year. I know Buffalo wound up beating them, but I picked New England because 15 in a row is 15 in a row. And to me, the numbers still indicate to me that the Steelers, you know, do they really have answers for Tom Brady? I'm not sure. I have to see it. I have to make me believe by doing it, and I haven't seen it yet.
Well, do you think after a couple of encouraging performances, I'll use that adjective, by the Patriots defense in their last two games, and against pretty decent offenses, or at least offenses that have talent, do you see that as a positive trend, or was it? I'm still not convinced that this team is making the corrections they need to on defense. I need to see more than just the last two games to be convinced of that.
Well, now, I mean, yeah, and you know how this league is. It is your team evolves as the season goes on,
right?
Let's not forget that the Green Bay Packers last year at this stage of the season, after six games.
Yeah, they didn't look like a Super Bowl.
They were 3-3.
Right.
Okay? Some of that had to do with losing Ryan Grant and other injuries they had. I mean, they had people dropping like flies, as you well know, and wound up with like 15, 16 guys on IR. So, you know, those are the things that happen. That's why, I mean, we're talking about the Chiefs. You know, the Chiefs who lost Eric Berry and Jamal Charles early in the season. You know, 0-3 has turned into 3-3. So every year you see teams get off to great starts and fade, and every year you see teams get off to mediocre starts and get hot. That's really what the playoffs has become, is getting hot. That's why we've seen three wild cards win the six Super Bowl. Three of the last six Super Bowls have been won by wild card teams, and they've done it all on the road. So I think there's signs of encouragement with New England, but they're playing one of the top organizations in this league, and they'll obviously be tested. It's the teams that are very familiar with each other, so there's no real surprises here on both sides. And it's going to be one of these games where this is not going to be a 10-3. It's not going to be a 17-10. I'd be shocked by that.
All right,
okay, so that could be a first quarter score or a halftime score.
So your score prediction for this game is?
I'll say New England 34-28.
I think that falls in line with what most people think. The Patriots will get in the 30s, and they'll hold their opponent in the 20s.
Yeah, I mean, and I mean that as a back-and-forth 34. I mean, last year was, what, 39-26, I believe.
And it wasn't even that close.
What it really
for most
wasn't
of the
that
game.
Kind of a game.
Yeah.
This one, I think, might be more of a – and I wouldn't be surprised if Pittsburgh won 34-28 here, but I don't see – you know, this isn't going to be – this isn't going to be Monday night 12-7, let's put it that way.
And you know, one of the reasons why last year that game got out of control for Pittsburgh was because the Patriots' defense made a lot of plays.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Chung was great.
Yeah. They picked off Roethlisberger. They sacked him. They got him on there. I mean, you're going to have to see a big improvement by the Pats' defense from what they've shown this year in order to make that happen again. Because they haven't shown that consistency.
This is a very interesting two-week stretch for the Steelers, to be honest with you. You know, they're back at 5-2. They're back a half game in the first place with the byes. You know, you always got to do a half game and so on. But the next 2 weeks, they host the Patriots and they host the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to find out a lot about Pittsburgh and where they stand because they're playing the top team in the AFC, and then they're playing their division rival, who obviously they can't afford to get swept by, if they plan on winning the division again.
Yep.
So we're going to learn a lot about the Steelers. The Baltimore game is actually a Sunday night game. We'll learn a lot about the Steelers these next 2 weeks. And, you know, did they amass these 5 wins over mediocre competition? Possibly. But we'll also find out where they are playing-wise, if they can win either one of these games, both of these games, or perhaps lose both of these games. And then, listen, they're in a very interesting division. We talk about Baltimore. We talk about Pittsburgh. Don't dismiss Cincinnati. And I'm not saying that because they're 4-2. Cincinnati has gotten pretty good on defense. A lot of people talk about Andy Dalton and A.J. Green and all that. But defensively, they've gotten very tough. They're a little deep on the defensive line now. You know, they played Buffalo a couple weeks ago, handed them on their first loss, and held the Bills' offense to one touchdown. One touchdown. It hasn't been a lot of teams. Teams don't do that this year with Buffalo. So
that was a very good performance from the Bengals.
Listen, there's nobody in the AFC North right now, and I know it's only after 7 weeks. Nobody in the division has a losing record. So that's going to be a very interesting. I mean, this is the AFC North is not the NFC West. Let's leave it at that.
Right. Well, Russell, as always, you always bring a wealth of knowledge to the table here. We appreciate it, and John will be back here, I believe, next week, and we'll look forward to talking to you again then.
All right, guys.
Thanks a lot, Russell.
Have a great weekend, and so enjoy what should be a very, very fun game.
Thanks. Right,
thank you
too, Russell. All right, that's Russell Baxter, football guru. You can follow him on Twitter, Bax Football Guru. His website is also, I believe, footballguru.com. Is that right? Fun guy to talk to. Didn't I tell you he knew his stuff? I mean, those are numbers he doesn't even have written down. He knows that stuff off the top of his head. He's watched so much football. He's probably watched more football than probably anybody I know.
How many people do you know?
Outside this room? Not a whole lot. but I think I'm kind of I'm leaning into that same general direction, Jeff. I think I'm going to go 34-24 New England. And I think it's going to be, again, like we've seen all year, close for most of the time, maybe even a little back and forth. And then fourth quarter, I think the Patriots make it happen, pull away a little bit more. So I think it's going to be closer than people would like if you're a Patriots fan for most of the game. But fourth quarter rolls around, that's Brady time. I think they're going to pull away with it.
See, I wanted to go 34-21, but I'd now be the third person saying 34. So I'll give you two scores then. I'll take
No, you can't do that. You can't do that. You gotta come up with one score.
I'll tell you, I had the
34. Go with your gut.
I had the 34 in my head before the call, so
keep it there.
I was gonna make it interesting, but all right, 34-21 Pats. Every reason I've stated over the last 2 days, obviously you go with what Brady has done to the Steelers. I don't think the Steelers are gonna do anything to change. His history shows that they have never really done that. Brady's going to pick apart the middle of the field. James Harrison is not in the lineup. It's going to be really tough for them to bring the heat from both sides of the line the way they used to. And the Patriots are rolling right now. They're coming off the bye. They've won 8 in a row after the bye. They're 9-1 after the bye week since 2001. Gronkowski and Hernandez are even better than they were last year. And it's going to be a high-scoring game, I think, or a relatively high-scoring game. And, 34-21, Pat. So we haven't found anybody who thinks the Steelers are going to win this game yet, aside from the
aside from the people on First Take on ESPN. But what the hell do they know?
Yeah, clearly.
We got scores predictions from people who are listening, too. I think those are starting to roll in. Webradio at patriots.com. That's how you can send them to us. Or call Jeff, 508-298-0398. He's sitting in John Rook's seat today, and we'll be back right after this.
Hey, it's Jim from Ace Ticket, Boston's very own ticket agency. Ace Ticket is based here in Boston, so we know every seat in every venue. We're Boston fans just like you, from Boston sports to concert and theater. Whether you need one ticket or 100, Ace has you covered. So treat yourself or someone special. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com and take advantage of our free and easy pickup at our Fenway Park or Boston Garden location. That's 1-800-MY-SEATS.
1-800-MY-SEATS.
Dear business traveler who's flying away, you can get more out of your working day with plush leather seats including legroom galore to stretch out your knees, feet, and more. Plus 36 channels of DirecTV in your seat gives you something to watch once work is complete. Log on at JetBlue.com or call for an experience dedicated to you above all. My name is Edwin, and I'm a JetBlue crew member.
And that was a dedication to you from JetBlue. Experience it firsthand at JetBlue.com/business. Based on the average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines, DirecTV service available on flights in 48 contiguous states only.
Droid.
Introducing the Droid Bionic by Motorola. So powerful it can access your home computer remotely and pull out your music, movies, images, and documents at the mind-melting speed of Verizon 4G LTE. The Droid Bionic. It's not only the master of droids, it's the master of machines. Control it, and you control everything.
Get the new Droid Bionic by Motorola and never sync with a cord again. Visit any Verizon store, droiddoes.com, or call 1-800-256-4646. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com/4GLTE.
That is the metaphorical sound of you hitting your head against the wall in your search for the perfect brand new car. Let's chalk it up to the fact that you didn't know AutoTrader.com even had new cars. See, AutoTrader.com lets you compare new cars side by side, even special offers, so your head and heart can both get what they want. Say your heart wants a sporty 2011 coupe, but your head wants the best deal in town. Bingo! A never been owned before coupe that your head and heart can both agree on. AutoTrader.com, now the ultimate new car marketplace.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with cheese combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats! What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help. I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed, go Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation and account setup fee may apply in some states.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Health Care Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
This is Patriots Hall of Famer Steve Nelson, and you're listening to Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio.
All right, we are back for the final few minutes of the program. Eric has left, and Kevin has jumped in. We are going to get through a couple emails real quick here. Tim in Baltimore wants to know about the status of the Steelers' offensive line and if this will be a good week for the Patriots' defensive line. I think it should be. The Steelers' offensive line, again, has been a mess outside of Marquise Pouncey. Three left tackles have started for them so far this season. Two left guards, two right guards, and two right tackles. It's been a revolving door. That's not really what they're looking for. I also believe that Jerod Mayo will return from injury this week.
Really?
I do believe that.
Hot take right there.
Yeah.
It's breaking news.
It will.
The hottest take of the week right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, no, that's the first I've heard.
I mean, it's my gut. It's not on any inside information.
No, I like it.
I've seen.
You're getting off the fence and you're making a stand.
Yeah, I truly believe that. It's going to be 4 weeks since the injury, and initial reports said 4 to 6 weeks.
Yep.
He came back early from the same injury to a different knee in 2009. Again, he wasn't the same player, so I think that is cause for concern. But Mayo has been out there practicing. I think he's been to like 6 or 7 straight practices.
Yep. Albeit limited.
Yeah, going back to the Friday before the Dallas game. So I think everything that he has done over the last couple weeks makes it look like that he should be ready to play the Steelers. So
Kraft and Mayo go together.
They sure do. So, yeah, it gives the Patriots another blitz option. I think Brandon Spikes has really raised his game. He's gotten into the backfield a whole lot more frequent in the last couple weeks. So I think you should see the Patriots be able to attack Ben Roethlisberger and that offensive backfield a little more because of all of those things. Tim also wants to know if Rob Gronkowski and Tim Tebow could get together and have a reality show. I think that would be phenomenal. I would tune in every week. I watch a lot of bad reality TV, but that would take precedent on my DVR. So,
here's a question for you, Jeff.
All right.
And kind of piggybacking on Tim's question here. So, we all know the Pittsburgh offensive line can be the Achilles heel for that football team.
Yep.
But do you see the Patriots going after it and attacking it by blitzing a lot, sending 4, 5, 6 guys? Or do you see them kind of settling back?
So far to this point in the season, they've settled a lot. And I think that's been one of their biggest faults.
And the reason I ask is because Pittsburgh is so pass-oriented this
right.
season, which we discussed a little bit yesterday. But they like to throw the ball around a lot more this year than they
yeah.
have in the past, and Mendenhall's just been kind of snoozing.
Right.
So I'm just kind of curious as to what you think, how they'll play it on defense.
I think they'll start off by doing what they do. Maybe mix. I mean, if Mayo does come back and they could add him and Spikes to the mix in terms of blitzing, it would be a good look for them. And I think they'll start off the same way that they've been playing throughout much of the season. The thing that I don't like about the defense, or it hasn't been as much in recent weeks because they've been a lot better, but when they started out, I think especially against Buffalo, they didn't blitz much, and they were dropping 7 guys into coverage a lot, and Buffalo was still picking them apart. I think if you're going to drop that many guys and it's not working, you got to try something new. You got to bring more of a blitz and just see where it takes you. So, but again, I think you'll probably see more of the conservative look to open the game, try to make Pittsburgh or not make Pittsburgh make mistakes, but allow Pittsburgh to make mistakes. I mean, Mendenhall, I think it's in his head with the fumbling issues, and
yep.
that could definitely be a reason why Pittsburgh has gone to more of a pass-heavy offense. I think it has something to do with
it. Yeah, I mean, I could see them kind of sitting back and trying to take away the deep routes from your boy Mike Wallace.
We're going to get to him.
And, you know, just kind of making them throw the ball underneath and making Ben check down to Miller and Hines Ward and just kind of seeing if he takes what they give him in order to string. Can you string 10, 12, 14 plays together in a row to make
right.
a drive as opposed to just hit the home run? Personally, I think that's what we're going to see more of the same. It's rare that you see these Patriot teams really attack the opposition,
right.
even with a weak offensive line. You rarely see them, you know, storm the castle,
yeah.
so to speak, sending 5, 6, 7 guys.
Well, I think part of that is because they loaded up on the defensive front so much this offseason and went to that 4-man front that Belichick just wanted to see if his guys could go to work and leave the linebackers and defensive backs to do what they do in the backfield there. But again, I think if it doesn't work, you have to try some new things, send some more guys. Shift over to John in Alaska, who basically just is wondering if the Patriots could be a little overconfident in this game because they've been playing so well and because they destroyed Pittsburgh, for lack of a better word, last year in the same building. I don't think that's the case. I think whatever it is that Bill Belichick does during the bye week, it has clearly worked. They've won 8 in a row after the bye, going all the way back. The only loss since 2001 after a bye week has been in 2002. in terms of the regular season. So he's going to have them going. He's got them focused. I think he took the foot off the pedal a little bit last week. He had that scrimmage on Tuesday. They had some fun with it. They had a chance to break for 5 days. They came back to work for 4 days this week. Devin McCourty said today that the extra day of practice is only good if they take advantage of it. He used the word attack. He said they wanted to attack the extra day of practice and make sure that they're out there doing what they can. If you have an extra day of practice, that's all well and good. If you don't do anything with that extra day, it doesn't do you any good at all. So I don't think overconfidence would be an issue, not against a Pittsburgh team. If this was Jacksonville or somebody like that coming off a bye, then I think that creeps into your head. But I don't think the Steelers are a team that the Patriots would be ready to overlook. Another one here from John and Gene, or maybe? I don't know. Sorry. I'm having an issue here with my reading, clearly.
I don't read so well.
Today, Junior?
Well, you know, it's the dynamic here, and obviously I'm not a radio guy, but it's the dynamic of reading and talking at the same time.
It's tough.
That's a lot to do. I mean, I can drink coffee and drive a car and text on my cell phone, but
I don't
know
if you want to publicize that.
Hey, you know, they, whatever.
For all the stadies sitting on Route 1 waiting for you when you get out of here.
Yeah, I know. They're going to be... they're going to be hounding me now.
Think about the children, Jeff. Come on.
I'll backtrack. I'm not backtracking. I'm just moving off the subject here. Brings up a point here that Marcus Cannon, in his last bowl game, took care of J.J. Watt and tossed him around like a rag doll. So, obviously, he's very high on what Marcus Cannon can do. I think Marcus Cannon was obviously a guy who was a second-round prospect. And fell to the fifth round because he was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma the week really before the draft. A guy who has potential, a guy who has a ton of size, and somebody who will definitely or should be an asset to this team down the road. I think you're just going to have to wait at least one more year to see that because of the depth, and I think it's just, it's unrealistic to expect Marcus Cannon to go through everything that he has gone through since March and April, and then to come back and make a contribution this season. Patriots right now, too, have a lot of depth on that O-line. Also brings up the point that the wet track could be bad for Pittsburgh because it could slow down Mike Wallace and their pass rush. Now, as I was saying, I don't think the track is going to be too wet.
No, it says sunny with a high of 53 and 0% chance of rain on Sunday.
And I believe the same is basically the same thing for Saturday too.
Yeah, the only concern would be, I don't know if you happen to flick through the channels last night, Jeff. I watched UConn and Pitt on ESPN last night for a bit. So they were tearing Heinz Field up a little bit. You could see some chunks coming up, but that ground screw has Thursday, Friday, Saturday to get ready. Hopefully they replace their divots.
It's raining down there at this point.
Yeah, but I mean, I just
the rest of this week until Saturday.
I'm looking at weather.com right now. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I see sunshine. So I can't see the field conditions in terms of weather being an issue for the Patriots or the Steelers this weekend. The only thing I would think that could be a problem was if you start seeing these chunks come up, especially in the middle of the field where the big offensive linemen are.
Yeah.
That's the only issue that I'd foresee.
Yeah, and again, the field will probably be an issue, and Mike Wallace knows how to tread on this field. I do want to use that as a transition to get more into Mike Wallace, who
favorite.
Yeah, that's my boy right there.
Get a man crush on Mike Wallace.
Love the guy's downfield ability. I think it's improved greatly over the last year. I do not believe he's a complete receiver. I don't think he does anything but run the deep route. Now, when it comes to the deep route and a home run threat, he's as good as there is, and that's obviously a huge asset for a team, especially when you've got a quarterback like Ben Roethlisberger who can throw it as far as anybody. So after the show yesterday, I went home and I watched some film on Wallace, and I took his four long touchdown passes. He's got five this season. One of them was a two-yarder. I threw that out because it had nothing to do with the deep ball, obviously. I took the four long ones, and they went for 81, 40, 28, and 95. And I kind of looked at what happened. Now, I know that Mike Wallace is a lot better at reading defenses and taking advantage of defensive mistakes, whether it's the safety over pursuing another side of the field or the corner and the safety getting flat-footed or turning their hips the wrong way. And Wallace knows how to set guys up, bait guys for a different route, and then turn it into something longer. So he's gotten smarter. He really knows how to use that home run ability. It's not just standing up, going wide right, and just running as fast as he can. But I looked at these four touchdowns, and there were some glaring defensive errors on all four of them. I think one of them was a little more credit to the offense. Three of them were horrendous. So you start off with the 81-yarder against the Colts in week three. Wallace was on the left side of the field. His cornerback didn't really, the cornerback on his side didn't do a whole lot, kind of just let him go. He got caught in somewhat of a pick, but I don't think that he was supposed to stay on Wallace.
Sucky.
The safety on Wallace's side of the field did just that. He stayed 15 yards, he gave Wallace 15 yards of cushion, just started backpedaling nonchalantly, and kind of just let him do whatever he wanted. He let Wallace dictate the route. Wallace turned it into a post, flew past the middle linebacker as he dropped into a deep zone. The safety on the opposite side of the field, the front side safety, had absolutely no awareness at all. He was looking at his side of the field and his side only, left everybody on the other side of the field out to dry. Wallace scores from 81 easily. Bad defensive coverage, but again, a good job by Mike Wallace to recognize a defensive deficiency. The next one was 40 yards against the Titans in week 5. Now, this was a little bit of a different scenario. It was the last 3 minutes of the game. The Steelers had a 14-point lead. They were basically just trying to run out the clock. Now, it was a 40-yarder, so you know where they were on the field. It was 3rd and 7, and Ben Roethlisberger had a play fake. So Wallace was lined up outright again, single coverage. There was one deep safety who really just bit on the play fake. He wasn't looking anywhere else. And in that situation, a 3rd and 7, when you're just trying to get the ball back to give your offense a chance to make a comeback, I can see where he would bite on that. But the cornerback played off of Mike Wallace a little too much and then was sold by a little bit of a hitch in Wallace's route. In that situation, it's the technique. It's some communication between the cornerback and the safety. If the cornerback knows that the safety is going to play the play action until he actually realizes that the quarterback is going to pull the ball back and throw it, the cornerback has to give Mike Wallace, especially with his home run ability, a lot more respect and a lot more cushion. So again, technique from the cornerback and miscommunication between the safety and the cornerback allowed Mike Wallace to score that 40-yarder. The next one was in week 6, a 28-yarder against the Jaguars. Horrible, horrible play by the safety. The cornerback who was lined up over Wallace on the right side again, curled off into a soft zone, let him go. The safety on Wallace's side of the field was in a tough spot. He was in charge of his entire half of the field, kind of dropped back, had to be overly cautious, but the safety on the opposite side was completely baited by a pump fake by Roethlisberger, who faked it to a receiver on the left side of the field. The safety broke toward that. It left the safety over Wallace in an impossible position. Mike Wallace ran to the end zone, caught an easy pass. I give Roethlisberger some credit with the pump fake. You gotta kill the safety who bit on the fake, though, for allowing that to happen. And finally, last week against Arizona, the 95-yarder that was on every single highlight show in the world, Mike Wallace had single coverage, once again, on the right side of the offense. And the cornerback just, there was one deep safety, there was one safety who was up closer to the line on Wallace's side of the field. He was never really a factor. There was a deep safety on the opposite side of the field, the right side of the defense, the left side of the offense, who had no chance. So it's single coverage. And Wallace started by going into a little bit of a fade route. The cornerback bit on the fade route, squared his hips toward Ben Roethlisberger, and basically was waiting for Roethlisberger to throw the fade. That's when Wallace cut in, used the leverage to his advantage. The cornerback had no chance really to turn his hips or to get into better position. By that point, he was off balance. Then Wallace used another move to break closer toward the sideline. Roethlisberger hit him. I mean, he had a couple steps. The safety on the far side of the field was the only guy who even had a chance to tackle him. So again, credit Mike Wallace for a great move there and for baiting the cornerback on his side of the field, but bad technique led to that touchdown again. So,
winning.
I think what you see there is a guy who has freakish athletic ability, and now he knows how to use it, and he is beating defenses when they allow themselves to get beaten. And when you're going to look at this week, is he going to be able to rip off a long one against the Patriots? It comes down completely to good technique, good footwork, keeping yourself on balance, and then the communication between the safeties and the cornerbacks to make sure that he doesn't get by you.
Yeah, my big worry is there have been some games this year where, excuse me, it's been tackling optional football for the Patriots, especially in the defensive backfield. And just a quick glance at Mike Wallace's splits here, something jumped out to me. In terms of the passes, of the length of passes that are being thrown to him to complete these home run balls, 15 of his catches, almost half of his catches, are between 1 and 10 yards.
Huh.
8 of them, another significant chunk, are between 11 and 20, which still I don't consider a quote-unquote deep ball. We consider over 20 yards a deep ball.
Mm-hmm.
Only 6 of his receptions were completed 20-plus yards down the field. So that shows you that he's taking slants and out routes and either making a move or breaking a tackle or two and then taking them a significant distance. And that concerns me.
Yeah.
Because I'm more concerned with, you know, the Patriots giving him that cushion that we talk about and playing off of him and keeping him in front and then him getting loose than I am him blowing 50 yards down the field and Roethlisberger is hitting him, you know, 40, 45, 50 yards in stride down the field. It just looks to me like it's more than a coincidence here that most of his catches are either behind the line or within 20 yards of the line of scrimmage. I mean, he's caught 36 balls. Only 6 of them are 20-plus yards down the field.
From that day on, if I was going somewhere, I was running.
And this guy can run. And not only can he run, but as Jeff alluded to, the guy's got some wiggle in him. He's very, very quick. And so that's one thing the Patriots are going to have to pay attention to here is not only keeping him in front of them, but wrapping up when they get hands on him.
Yeah, you bring up a great point there. And I can't remember if it was after the Cowboys game or the Jets game. It was a day, maybe it was either a Monday or a Wednesday after the game, and Belichick was asked what he learned about his team on that day. And this was obviously after regardless of which game it was after a big win. And Belichick, the first thing he said was that they need to tackle better. And then he got into some good things about the team and stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, that Dallas game, there were so many broken tackles. The McCourty one was the one that stood out to me.
Yeah, him missing tackles is definitely surprising. But, yeah, you know, it must have been after that Dallas game because their running backs, they had a hard time wrapping up Dallas's running backs, and that was definitely an issue. So if you're not going to be as physical or as sound tackling against the Steelers, they are going to beat you. They are going to burn you, and they are tough guys. They rely on tough physical football when it comes to getting a lot of their wins.
And once they break that tackle, they're fast. It's not just Mike Wallace. I mean, you look at top to bottom, that's a very fast offense.
Antonio Brown, Emmanuel Sanders.
Emmanuel Sanders, yeah. Not so much Hines Ward anymore.
No, he's not. But it's
with his bum ankle.
They the guys in the locker room, though, have been saying you got to look out for those Hines Ward crack blocks.
Oh, yeah, he's famous for those.
Yeah, you got to – He is an interesting guy to play against. He went down early. I think it was a concussion in last year's game.
Yep.
So they didn't have to deal with him.
He missed some time, I think.
Yeah.
Some games after the Patriot game last year.
So you've got to wonder what type of motivation Hines Ward has. Is he angry because he didn't get a chance to see the Patriots last year in a game in which his teammates were embarrassed on their home field? What are your thoughts on this game?
See, I don't think it's going to be. I'm afraid that I'm falling into the trap. My prediction was 41-27.
Wow.
I think it's going to be a pretty easy time of it on Sunday. I'm one of those, if you want to call me a fan, I don't know if I'm really a fan. But we've been accused of having the fans here that have been, you know, calling in and listening. They've kind of thought that this would be an easy game, and I'm kind of trending more in that direction as opposed to Eric and Russell, who think it's going to be kind of a nip-and-tuck affair within one score, and maybe the Patriots pull away by 7-10 late.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Patriots are going to come out guns a-blazing, and I think they're going to take it to them. And I don't really see Pittsburgh being within a touchdown at any point during the second half of this game.
That would be surprising.
Hot take right there.
Yeah, that would be surprising if Pittsburgh was out of it early. I think the Patriots could pull away into the third quarter, maybe get a score before halftime, and give themselves a little bit of a cushion.
I could see Pittsburgh coming out and scoring first if they get the ball, or, you know, taking a very early lead or something along those lines, and I wouldn't be surprised because they're at home. It's an emotional game and all that. But I think really once the Patriots settle in, I just think this is a bad matchup for Pittsburgh.
It is.
And I think it's a bad spot coming off the bye week. This team, you know, they've got a lot of people back that have been nicked up, and people that have been nicked up and playing through injuries. Look at the safety core with all the thumbs.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are getting better. And I think it just does a world of good for them mentally and physically to take 3, 4, 5 days away and then come back refreshed, rejuvenated with a new commitment to this football team for the second half. And I think while the players were using that time to relax and kind of take it easy and rest up, I think the coaches were hard at work, and I just think this is a bad spot for Pittsburgh, and I just think there's too many things going against them here.
Yeah, and this is a big game. Obviously, Bill Belichick is not the type of guy who takes any game or any opponent lightly, but he said that he went to work, and he's going to do what he can to beat this team up. I mean,
and I think
stating the obvious here.
I think part of the confidence level, too, is that the fact that the Patriots have beat them there.
Right.
It's not a house of horrors by any stretch up there.
On a regular basis.
Yep.
And again, we keep going back to the record after the bye week. Bill Belichick knows how to handle the pulse of his team and how to get them going in certain situations. And he's historically great after a bye week. This is a big game too, because you're going to give yourself some real control in the AFC playoff picture if you can beat a team like Pittsburgh at this point in the season.
Here's another little bit of a prediction or a take here. We've seen a renewed commitment during the Jets game and the Cowboys game to running the football, to pounding the football, whether it be in the Jets game trying to run the clock out or against Dallas just because you felt like you could run it right at them. But whether it's Benny's toe that's busted up, whether the fact Danny Woodhead still probably isn't 100%, hasn't had the year that we expected him to have. Kevin Falk, I don't expect to play. I just don't see him out there this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Patriots spread him out, and I think Tom Brady throws the ball 40-plus times, and they get back to that hurry-up, quick tempo. They're going to air it out this and put 40-plus up on Sunday. I see them back to the old Patriots. Not so much, you know, that renewed commitment to the run, but just airing it out.
I wouldn't blame him for it, because clearly Tom Brady has shown that he knows how to handle this Pittsburgh defense. That soft zone over the middle of the field, and the cornerbacks, just they're average at best. And Brady's going to be able to expose those guys. I wonder how effective the no huddle will be against this Pittsburgh team. They use it to change the tempo of the game, but they also use it when they have a matchup they like.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much Pittsburgh really substitutes. They like to keep a core of their guys on the field together. You saw them go to the no huddle against Dallas a couple times when DeMarcus Ware came off the field.
And you want to even push it further, Jeff. The Patriots have had, you know, these 2 weeks here to collect themselves and rest. They're ready, they're conditioned, they're set for this. Pittsburgh didn't have a bye week last week. Not only did they not have a bye week, they had to fly all the way across the country to Arizona, play a 4 o'clock game, probably get home in the wee hours of the morning on Monday. I just don't think they're going to be as fresh. And I think that could have a factor in this week's game if the Patriots decide to go with the up-tempo offense.
Oh, it absolutely could. And the Arizona trip from Arizona to Pittsburgh, it's not like from Boston to San Diego or Oakland or anything like that. But those cross-country trips are nothing to really take lightly. You see, players really do get affected by those. It definitely takes them an extra day to collect themselves, get back onto a normal type of routine.
Yeah.
And those Monday meetings, they're pretty dreary.
Yeah.
And they need that Tuesday to get back and then practice on Wednesday. I mean, it's tough to recover when you're on a cross-country flight as opposed to when you can just go into the medical room, jump in an ice bath for a couple hours, and then go home and sleep in your own bed. It's the post-game routine after a West Coast game is a whole lot different. I think the one thing working in their favor, they were only playing Arizona.
Yeah.
That's not the most physical team in the world. So
it's not
a huge West Coast trip. It's not anything that I think would be a huge difference maker. I think it would play maybe 1% of a factor, whereas the bye week might play 15% of a factor. I think it's that's That's the exponential type of factor.
So Jeff Howe's going 34-21.
34-21.
34-21, yep. And I'm going 41-27. So similar spreads, but yep. I just think it's going to be a little bit more high scoring.
It's going to be a fun one to watch no matter what. It always is when these two teams take the field together. So
we got the newlywed just walking in the studio here.
Yeah, yeah. Congratulations over there to B-Lo.
Who'll be coming up next.
Kevin, who's the bum you dragged in to do radio?
As Fred would say, he's that guy, that young guy.
Oh, that.
It's kind
the
of
young
like
guy.
Looking in time-lapse mirror.
Or,
Scalavino
calls him the Howitzer.
The Howitzer. Not bad.
I don't mind that.
That should be the Twitter handle.
Paul calls him Gordie Howe. I mean, he's got many different names.
As long as you don't call me Steve
Howe. How do you come up with nicknames for you?
Wow. You went there. We took it in that direction.
That's where I went.
LePan didn't even give you a rim shot for that.
Nor should he.
Whatever. Well, anyway, we got Brian Lowe coming up next with the Fantasy Lowdown. So
we sure do, Kevin.
Sticks around with that.
Yeah. How'd it go, Jeff?
It was fun. Yeah. I had a lot of fun these last couple days. So thanks
oh,
for...
Oh, several days. I knew it was today. I didn't know several days.
Okay. 2 days.
Sorry.
It's done a great job pinch hitting.
Thanks Excellent. For listening, man. I
Excellent.
Appreciate it.
Hey, you know, are you going to listen to the Fantasy Lowdown?
Of course.
Okay, good.
Yep.
Good.
He's going to go back and crank out a story with you in his ears, bro.
There you go. That's what most people do. They just tune me out. They just kind of have it as background noise.
There you go. It's been a blast. Have fun filling in next hour or two.
All right, Jeff.
All right.
All right. Fantasy Lowdown coming up next.